Welcome to this episode of Anesthesia on Air, the podcast from the Royal College of Anaesthetists, and I'm delighted that today we're presenting a podcast with a perioperative care flavour. So my name is David Sowen, and I'm the Director of CPOC. I'm the Acting Chief Executive of Sherwood Forest Hospitals. And today I'm joined by our CPOC fellow, Claire Frank, who is a preoperative assessment pharmacist based at North Wales, and also Dr. Hattie White, who's a CT4 anaesthetist at the Princess of Wales Hospital, Bridgend. Today, we're going to be talking about Hattie's project, which won the prize at the Patient Safety and Perioperative Practice Conference earlier this year. Hattie's presentation of improving clinical incident reporting in the District General Hospital Anaesthetic Department. She wasn't aware when she entered that prize that this was going to be part of her prize, so she's delighted for that. But we're going to explore some of the work that she's been doing and then some of the learning. Let me just get some background from both Claire first and then Hattie about their roles. So Claire, can I go over to you?
So I'm Claire. I'm the current CPOC fellow and I'm a pre-op assessment pharmacist by background, but over the last year I've been stretching out further into the perioperative field.
Fantastic. And what have you been doing for a year, Claire?
Well, lots and lots over the last year. We've launched new CPOC resources, conducted CPOC surveys, and I've also been doing some local QI projects as well. So I'm really interested in hearing about Hattie's.
She's forgetting to mention that she's done all of the discharge work for CPOC. It's all available on our website. Don't forget to check it out, www.cpoc.org.uk. Hattie, tell us about you.
So hi, I'm Hattie. I'm a CT4 anaesthetics trainee, did the OCCS pathway, and I'm currently working in Princess of Wales Hospital, which is District General Hospital in South Wales, kind of halfway along the M4 corridor for the Welsh bit. I've done the first 3 years of my OCCS training in Cardiff, and then I've come to Princess of Wales for the last year of my CT4 training, and then I'm applying well very shortly for ST4 applications for February.
And where are you hoping to go for that?
I'm hoping to stay in South Wales, yeah, fingers crossed. But I went to uni in Cardiff. I left for a year for F3 and then I came back again. So I think hopefully that speaks lots for how great Wales is. But no, the training's fab and it's a beautiful place to live.
Brilliant. So I mentioned right at the start that you were probably a bit surprised to realise that you were going to be asked to do this podcast, but you entered the Patient Safety and Perioperative Practice Conference Prize. Just explain how you saw that and decided to enter.
So we'd been working on the improvement project that I'm going to talk about today for a number of months before I saw the conference advertised. And it kind of fit the bill, to be honest, because I'm not sure you can say patient safety better than doing a critical incident quality improvement project. So we decided to enter fairly early in the project's conception. And I think we were lucky, really, that we had a good amount of data to present by the time the conference came about. But yeah, I definitely wasn't expecting to have to speak on a podcast as a result of it. It wasn't something I thought I'd do as part of my anaesthetic training, but it's a new experience.
So Hattie, I'm really interested in why you came up with the idea for this project and what was the background that made you focus on this?
I was on call actually with the consultant who runs our clinical governance audit meetings, which we have monthly in Bridgend. And we were discussing how we felt we were probably missing out on important learning opportunities because we didn't currently have a local means to report clinical incidents other than the DATEC system, which he had multiple reports of people finding quite difficult to access, taking a bit too much time. And although they understood the importance of filling it in for patient safety issues, we felt that there were probably some near-miss events and other learning opportunities that probably weren't being captured on the DATEC system, but that would still be useful to discuss as an anaesthetic department. So we initially started off trying to work out ways to make the DATEC system more accessible. But as part of that, I started having a bit of a read about what was available in the literature and realised that there wasn't much out there in terms of how to kind of construct a local incident reporting system that was easy to access and that could be kind of used on a monthly basis to report back to the department. There were a few different papers out there that discussed the things that would make a good system, and that was mainly ease of access, regular reporting back, discussions about learning on a regular basis so that people that were reporting felt that they were gaining something from the reports that they were making, but also having it as anonymous as possible, a non-punitive culture that made people feel as though they could report just for the purposes of learning rather than it being for anything else. So I set out then to develop the system. I did use some guidance in the literature to kind of shape the system. And I also talked to one of my friends who's in the army as an Apache pilot. A lot of the literature that you look at talks about the military aviation industry being kind of the gold standard for critical incident reporting. And so I asked her what they did there. And as well as having a formalized system, which they filled in with their name and lots of details, they had a much simpler anonymized system as well that was used for other incidents that they felt that they wanted to report, but that they didn't want to put their name to necessarily, that they thought that other people could learn a lot from. I was kind of working on the basis that their kind of proper official system was like our day texting, but that it would be useful to have this other system to capture all these other micro incidents really that weren't necessarily severe enough to need a day text, but that could still prompt learning as a department.
So there's been a recent report that's just come out by Penny Dash about reporting and reports in the safety industry. And in effect, that describes that often we overcomplicate things. So the beauty, I think, what you're describing is that you had a simple idea that's got relevance to all. And I'm interested in that reflection that you touched on there between incident or near miss, if you like, reporting within military stroke aviation compared to healthcare. Just expand on that a bit more for us.
So I think the military industry have the benefit that they have digitization of everything that happens on an aircraft. So the computer can pick up if something happens that's outside the bounds of normal, and then it prompts the operator to comment on why that happened. Whereas within medicine, we don't have that standard necessarily that we're held to. In South Wales, we don't have digital anaesthetic charts yet. And so we don't necessarily have that kind of prompting in the back of your mind every time to say, oh, why did this happen? Why did this happen? And so I think because of that in the aviation industry, they are automatically encouraged to report everything and are held to very kind of strict parameters in terms of what is normal and what is abnormal. Whereas in anaesthetics, that doesn't happen as much. I also think there's more of a culture of reporting near misses in the aviation industry. Whereas in anaesthetics, I think we, and in medicine in general, it doesn't come to mind when you have a near miss that, oh, I should report that for someone else to learn from as much as it would for them.
Brilliant. Really interesting. So you have this idea for a quality improvement program. So tell us what you did.
We started off trying to get some baseline data. And in order to do that, we looked at how many anaesthetics we'd performed over a year's period. That was from October 23 to October 24. And then we looked at how many cases we'd discussed in our clinical governance meetings over that same time period. We used the number of cases discussed rather than the number of day texts performed, because we felt that the number of cases discussed probably better and more accurately represented the number of cases that we had come up with learning plans from. Most of the department would have heard about them and are therefore likely to have been affected and develop their own learning upward points from them too. From that, so we did just shy of 10,000 anaesthetics over that year, and we discussed 13 cases, so about one a month, or just over one a month. So that works out about one in 708 anaesthetics were kind of formulating a learning point as on a wider departmental level. We then tried to set a goal, and this turned out to be quite tricky for a number of different reasons. So there's different numbers in terms of the incident rate of a critical incident in anaesthetics quoted in lots of different papers, and they vary quite significantly. And I think partly that's because underreporting of critical incidents is prevalent. Even if you're doing a study and you're asking everyone to report everything that goes wrong, you're probably going to miss a few. Also because all of these studies use different criteria as to what actually counts as a critical incident. So in the end, we decided we'd try and compare ourselves to a national average. And we found that national average by looking at the number of anaesthetics carried out in the UK over a year's period, which we used the NAPSIX data for, because it had a 96% response rate, which was therefore nearly all the anaesthetics in the UK over a year's period. And we compared that to the number of reports in the same time period to the Safe Anaesthetic Liaison Group. And that gave us an incidence of kind of critical incident reporting to number of anaesthetics of about one in 73. So we realised as a department, we were about a factor of 10 out. And we used that as our initial aim to try and achieve. I then surveyed the department to explore the barriers to why people weren't reporting. I think in general, I've learned that the barriers can be split into three distinct categories. There's culture-based barriers like lack of anonymity or concern about what people will think if you report and discuss your case openly when you've done something that potentially wasn't best practice. There's reporting system based problems like lack of access to the DATEC system, difficulty filling out the DATEC system, the time taken to complete the DATEC system. And then there are outcome based measures such as not hearing back about the learning points that have been generated from the issue that you've raised and not seeing any change to the system or knowing that it's changed anyone else's practice either. So that was what we gained from our survey. But 100% of people in the survey said they'd be more likely to submit patient safety concerns if a simpler and anonymized process was available. So there's the anonymized element of the QR code that we then created. We do take down the person's name when they fill out the form, just in case we need to follow up with them about any patient safety concerns and whether there needs to be there should have actually been a day test completed, or check that person's okay for this thing that they've reported. But we don't announce the name when we discuss these cases at a clinical governance level. So yes, the fourth step was creating the QR code, which we use Microsoft Forms. It's incredibly simple to fill out. It has lots of free text boxes. It's not asking people to be particularly prescriptive. It asks for the type of incident, where the incident took place, the date of the incident. We haven't got any patient identifiable data being recorded, although it is still kind of, it does require an NHS login just because we're getting data about patients. And so after those few months of having that form, we'd improved our incident and our number of cases discussed to 15 cases over a 3 month period, which gave us an incidence of 1 in 85 anaesthetics, which was nearly at our goal.
So your premise was that people were underreporting on incidents. You did some data analysis and that confirmed that in terms of the number of anaesthetics in your organisation compared perhaps to what would be expected. You did some work to understand what the barriers to that were, and I'll get your honest thoughts on Datex probably towards the end of this, but we recognise that Datex isn't the easiest, and other reporting systems are available. A lot of UK hospitals do use Datex, but the Datex system wasn't being utilised. You then attempted to solve the problem by designing an alternative method, which was perhaps more modern technology, including a QR code, and that showed an improvement in reporting.
I'm really interested. You mentioned that the reporting improved, but what would you say was the impact on the department as a result of implementing this form?
I think one of the big things that would come with any project that's looking to improve a culture of reporting incidents and mistakes and things is that it requires a really big cultural shift within the department. And I was impressed actually by how well everyone took to the challenge and started happily reporting just little things that they did or didn't do that other people could learn from. And a lot of the reports weren't about human behaviour at all. They were kind of systems-based problems that then needed to be fed up various chains to try and improve labelling of various medications and the gowns that the patients were being given to come to theatre with. There was a whole array of issues that weren't anyone's fault as such, but it just highlighted a system that would have otherwise gone slightly unchecked that probably wasn't best for patient care. The one thing I do think in terms of the impact was that we had months that we had lots of reports and we had months that we had very few. But one of my biggest takeaways from it actually was that it didn't matter how many reports we had each month, because every report prompted an interesting learning discussion. And actually having that discussion at our monthly governance meetings was better than not having any discussion at all. Although some months it felt like it had much greater impact than other months, it was still much better than not doing anything at all.
I think that's a really valid point, Hattie, that like any progress is progress, and slowly and steadily it can increase the reporting and increase the learning and ultimately improve patient safety.
The other thing actually I'd say on that note is that it generated what could be some really useful additional quality improvement projects, which as trainees, where it's really interesting to see these other areas that people could then take on and kind of have all these projects spiraling off to improve patient care as well.
So the beauty of this project is, I think, the simplicity of the idea and then obviously the outcomes that have come from it. And certainly when you were at the conference earlier this year, there were some high quality presentations and yours stood out for those reasons, as well as your presentation, which is why you won the prize. But what would you say is the wider messaging that we need to get out to our organisations and our anaesthetic teams and departments?
I think it's probably that it's very easy to go through your day-to-day practice and not, unless you have a reminder up on the cupboards at work or something to give that idea that clinical incident reporting is important and can come up with lots of useful learning points and patient safety points, that it's very easy to forget about it. And it's not that people are bad doctors and they don't want to learn, or that they're not adhering to the kind of the best practice, good practice principles of being a doctor. It's just that in our day-to-day busy lives, it's not something that we think about. But also that this was a really easy project to set up. It's a QR code. And once it's done, it's I don't know, 10 minutes of work the night before clinical governance to present a few things that people have encountered that month. And then the department do the rest of the work by having those learning discussions and coming up with the action points. As a trainee, I think you don't, It's very difficult being a rotational trainee to cause the proper culture change in a department. And I think making sure that having a good kind of consultant backup and support is important in terms of allowing the project to continue. I think that'll be one of the biggest challenges of the project. But yeah, I think the kind of the wider message would be that it's easy to do. You just need to put it in the front of people's minds, and that it's a really good quality improvement project to do as a trainee, because it's kind of covers a lot of bases.
Clearly, your name is in the stars now. You won the prize. Doing a podcast, there's no stopping you. We're writing your reference for your training program as we speak. But what are you next going to do with this project?
We've got some exciting plans for it, actually. So myself and one of the other trainees in the health boards, the health board consists of three hospitals, all kind of medium-sized district general hospitals. And we're hoping to spread the project out across the other two from induction in August. The plan will be that each hospital will have their own separate reporting system with a trainee and a consultant responsible in each hospital to kind of collect the data and to feed that back at an individual level. I think some of the beauty of the project really is that it's done in-house and it's not a health board wide thing. It's something that you discuss as a department, because that's a safe space for people rather than doing it on a broader level where you might feel more inclined to think that people might be judging you, or there might be an element of punitive action if you said something that you didn't, it wasn't quite right. So I think keeping it in-house is really important, but we're hoping that the trainee representative in each hospital can then feed back an interesting case a month, or maybe every couple of months, and that we can send out then a trainee-led newsletter to the whole health board, all the anaesthetic departments, with some interesting learning points that are relevant to everybody. We're also looking to change our language that we're using around it slightly as we do that. So historically, so far, it's been called a clinical incident reporting system. And we're looking to change it to kind of a platform for sharing experiences for anaesthetic learning, because we feel like that takes away from the something's gone wrong here kind of narrative, and hopefully encourages people that this is all about learning and about sharing experiences rather than anything negative. And one day we'd love to make it all Wales, but one step at a time.
What would you say, Hattie, is the most important thing you've learned on a personal level from undertaking the QI work?
I think it's probably that cultural change is really difficult to do. You can't just set up a project and let it run. You have to keep nagging. And although the nagging feels like you don't want to annoy people, I think everyone at audit meetings each month can see the benefit of why it's useful. And so I think it's, yeah, don't be afraid to nag. Find a consultant who will be enthusiastic about it, because you need a consultant on your side if you want to encourage cultural change amongst a department that you're rotating through. And be prepared to lead the way as well, because I've had to report quite a few silly things that I've done in order to have something to discuss at the meetings. So I think be prepared to reflect on your own practice regularly and put those things forward just to prove that the system works.
What would you say then to doctors at your stage in training, be it allied health professionals, be it pharmacists, who are just embarking, got a bit of an idea for a quality improvement project, don't quite know where to go with it next? What would you say to them, and how would you encourage them?
I think you've just got to start. I think sometimes it feels like you haven't got the plan fully in place, but it's best to get going. I think looking to see what other places have done is really useful. When I looked on the clinical incident reporting, and I'm sure there'll be someone listening to this that says I've done exactly that, it's already been done. But I think it can be really hard as anaesthetic trainees and trainees in any realm of medicine and all of healthcare, really, to see the projects that other people have done. And it's why things like conferences are a great way to get ideas and take them back with you. But I think have a look and see what other people have done elsewhere, because there's no need to reinvent the wheel with these things. And I'd be very happy and flattered if anyone wanted to do exactly the same things I've done somewhere else. I think it's very easy to do. I also recently discovered that the RCOA have a really great PDF document on audit recipes. So if you ever got an idea, look it up, because I only found it recently and it's amazing. It gives you basically how to perform an audit that's RCOA approved. So that would be another top tip.
Yeah, the audit recipe book, which did start as a book, but then it's become a bit more modern. Absolutely. QI, I think you've described it, you know, trying to change culture is fiendishly difficult. QI, it's hard work. So the first time you get a pushback, don't take it badly. And what I say to people is, a no is not a never. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think people often have to see the outcome of the change before they are willing to accept it's a good idea. It's easier with something like this in a way than if you're asking people to change their practice significantly. This is asking them to do something that's kind of on the edge of their practice that is like an extra added thing. But asking people to change practice can be really difficult. And I think kind of like if you were putting a business case to anybody for anything, you need to prove that it's a good idea before they'll be willing to accept it. So yeah, got to keep on going.
It's a fantastic project, Hattie, and you've already described how you're looking to roll it out in the future. But has it made you want to keep doing QI and finding a new projects?
It has done, although I think you end up quite invested in the ones that you're currently doing. And I'm finding now that if I'm looking to take anything else on, it's kind of things that are branching off from this. So absolutely. And I think it's definitely given me a good amount of experience in terms of what to expect when you're doing a QI, in terms of the reauditing, the hopefully seeing an improvement, the keeping on going anyway, and thinking about what changes you can make that will be long lasting. But yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping that we can go further with this one first, but I would certainly do more in the future.
Congratulations once again on being the winner of the prize. It was a fantastic project, and I think a few things I'd pull out is the simplicity of that and addressing the need. I think some of the technology we use is really overcomplicated, and DataX isn't as user-friendly as we'd want. I think your points about the quality of the learning that comes out from this new system is really important. So that's just fantastic to hear. So congratulations once again.
It really shows that starting small with an idea that everybody can get on board with really makes a difference. Mm. And I think it can be extrapolated to other areas as well. So in pharmacy, we're also supposed to report near misses. And it really does show that actually maybe something nice and simple would really help with reporting that.
Well, thank you so much, Claire and Hattie. And thank you all for listening. We'll have much more information and useful links in the episode description, so look out for those. And for more podcasts like this, make sure you subscribe to Anaesthesia on Air and review us whilst you're there.
It's been called Scotland's best-kept secret, Dr. Gray's Hospital in Elgin, where consultant anaesthetists come for hands-on medicine and a life that works for you. In theatre, your judgment counts. Decisions are made at the table, not lost in layers of red tape. Minutes later, you're on the coast or in the forest, home for dinner with family. Make a life, not just a living. Go to wishyouworkedhere.scot and arrange a visit to see for yourself. Flights and accommodation covered. That's wishyouworkedhere.scot.